Buddhist Summer School, Thursday afternoon, 7th September 1978. And so we come now to the last meeting of this week physically. But all of you who have come in the spirit of love, with the aspiration to live the religious life, remain members of a meeting which never began and will never end. Because in the spirit, the meeting is in eternity. And there in the spirit, it is not as if one meets an other. There is no otherness in truth. There is only the total oneness, the wholeness and the holiness. In terms of the flesh, in terms of our specific psychophysical lives, there are separations, there are misunderstandings, difficulties, shortcomings. But in terms of eternity, in terms of the immortal, there is none of that. And every one of us is rooted in that. And that waits, to use human language, with infinite patience, forbearance, understanding, endless wisdom, and an eternal love. And that is what subsumes us here, and not only us here, but all humanity. It may be that a large proportion of human beings the world over will never know this at all. But that does not matter. That is the way of life as it unfolds in time and space. Because life has its own trends. And life is not merely the biological life of living creatures. Life is truth, reality, existence, all of them. So, because we meet with love and at least some understanding, that reality infuses us and moves the ways of our life in the right direction. We may not recognize the right direction, because that rightness, which is the perfect rightness, is something which shines constantly and fully only when we have realized our true humanity, become enlightened, become the embodiment of truth and wisdom, of love and goodness, of beauty and happiness. So do not feel a shadow of sorrow at departing. The body, the temporal, must of necessity come, must of necessity go, but in our actual innermost reality, there is no coming or going. There is only the manifestation of that eternal activity in terms of our coming and going. It is not for us to question the ways of the eternal, because the way of the eternal is the integration of all the unique and so-called separate ways of each and every individual. Let us bear in our hearts the consciousness of this unity, this little Sangha. And if we can bear that constantly, without necessarily remembering the particular individuals who compose the Sangha, then we are always in communion and also, without our knowing it, often in inward communication, as from one unique individual to another unique individual. And that is how it is. And so there is no sense of loss or gain, whether we are together or whether we are distant from each other in time and space. All the great teachers were concerned with our happiness, with our welfare, as contrasted with the ill-fare from which men and women the world over suffer. Our true happiness, our happiness here and now, and that happiness, which is the happiness of spiritual freedom, is something which is very difficult for us mortals to see or to comprehend. But that is the happiness with which they were concerned. And that is why they expended themselves for our sakes, so that we could learn, so that we could have the inestimable privilege of being disciples, learners. And if we are true learners, then those who taught are the true teachers, because we, by our act of learning, have conferred teacherhood upon them. Never in history have they imposed themselves upon us as teachers. Never did they say, come here and learn this from me. They waited like eternity waits. They waited patiently, lovingly, alert, watchful, for him who was ready to come, and who came of his own free will and accord. And surely that is the right spirit of the true teacher. He doesn't assert he's a teacher. He doesn't intrude his mastership upon anyone. He is the server, the helper of everyone. He's truly, in the Buddha's words, the good friend of everyone. You will understand why, therefore, I always disclaim being a teacher. I am not a teacher. I am your fellow student. I am your servant. Nothing else. And this service is no bondage. It is joy. It is a peaceful inward joy. And in the expending of one's life in that kind of service, one through dying to every single past moment is living in terms of eternity now, at this living moment. So do bear that in mind. If you think of me, if you turn your thoughts to me, you are turning your thoughts, your loving thoughts, towards your fellow student and nothing else. The Buddha used to say, all that the teacher, out of compassion, can do for his disciples, that have I done for you. All that I can say is that all that can be done out of compassion as unto fellow students, as a servant of their needs, that I have tried to do. No one is better aware of his shortcomings, his own shortcomings, than myself. I know how poor is the activity in which I have enjoyed myself this week. So, look kindly upon the shortcomings. Let us, in the words of the Buddha to his great disciples, regard each other with the eye of affection. The eye of affection, which does not refuse to look at the faults, the shortcomings, see them, look at them, understand them fully, my faults and shortcomings as well as your own, you see. And in that understanding, you will be healing me. Don't say, what can we do for you? How can we express our gratitude or thanks to you? Don't try to. It is like this. A parent who is a real parent, who has real love, loves all his children with all his being. There are no comparisons, there are no differentiations. The naughty boy and the good boy or girl in his family all receive his complete love and attention. You see, look at it that way. And therefore, if we see it that way, then the supreme good possible for us will emerge out of our daily living process, wheresoever we are. Now here, we have had a unique opportunity, as we always do when we come to this school, the summer school here, and each of us, according to his capacity, according to his love, his true devotion for the truth, and consequently in accord with his behavior in every respect, will have reaped the fruits of it all. And those who have not been sufficiently mindful, or those who have been a little bit like the unwise virgins, will not reap such a rich harvest, naturally. So you see, it behoves us never to lose the immediate living moment. For it is only in the living moment, the immediate moment of consciousness, in which is the actuality. We say the past is dead. In a sense, the past is dead. But the whole of the past is fully alive in the present moment, the present living moment, the now. What is this living moment? It is the result, the fruition of the entire past put together. But the entire past, which has been a continuously changing past, is actually, in terms of space and time, the very beginning, which has undergone transformation after transformation. Every split moment of universal existence, and has come to fruition in this immediate moment here and now. So the past is not alive in us in terms of the actual shape and form of the event. In terms of the actual particular men and women and so on who have lived in the past. Because this moment is the transformation of the total universe through a time without a beginning. If we understand this, we will get a glimpse of the seriousness of the immediate moment. That is why the Buddha, after saying to his monks, whatsoever a teacher can do for you out of compassion, I have done for you. And then he proceeds and says, do not waste your opportunities and suffer remorse for it afterwards. Here are trees. Sit down and meditate. Do not lose your opportunity. Be awake in every moment. Because if one is not awake in every moment, the full self-awakening, the Samma Sambodhi, can never become manifest through each of us as individuals. It is not you, the person, or I, the person, the mortal existential being, who realizes Samma Sambodhi. As I have said, 100 times and will say 100 times more again and again. It is this totality. It is this unborn, unbecome, unmade. This which is the perishable becoming process. It is that unborn, unbecome, unmade which manifests itself through that which is the perishing process. When we, each one of us, is wholly purified, wholly cleansed, wholly free of ignorance and delusion, and with it of greed and fear and hatred, then the great miracle takes place of the finite in such complete and total relationship with the infinite and immortal that what we call realization, what we call Buddhahood or fruition or fulfillment is made manifest through this, which in its imperfect state is manifests so much that is obstructive to that eternal perfection. So now, let us not seek for ourselves, but realize that there is nothing whatsoever for us as individuals. I, the separate person, the individual being, am but the shadow cast by God when He stands in the light of His own eternal being. That is what I am. I am a shade. But I, the shade, cease to be a shadow, darkening what is around me, if I do wake up to the truth and remain in that wakened state every moment. Because then that eternal light is no longer something outside, something which I am trying to seek, but shines from within. And when it shines from within you, you have ceased to cast any shadow anywhere. No longer does one, as an individual, blight that which is perfect beauty and goodness and truth. That is how it happens. So, bear in mind, there is nothing for oneself as a separate self. Every moment, the simultaneity of the life-death pulse goes on. And if we learn how to die, then life in its eternity will live unobstructedly through that which is apparently dying. Because that dying is not destruction. It is not the end of things. It is the perfect consummation. The Lord of Death is the consummator, the bringer to perfection. If you look at those wonderful teachings in the Upanishads which bring this out, you all well, or I expect a good many of you at least, know that famous Katha Upanishad, where Nachiketas, the young son of a Brahman teacher, a great Brahman teacher, is told somewhat impatiently by his father, "To death I give you." The story opens with the teacher giving away his worldly goods, the last of his worldly goods. And the son, Nachiketas. Nachiketas means, the name means, the unknowing one. The unknowing one. Says to his father, "Father, to whom will you give me?" And he repeats the question three times. And the father says, "To death I give you." Therefore, dutifully, Nachiketas goes to the home of death. And the Lord of Death is away on a visit somewhere. For 3 days, Nachiketas waits for him. And when the Lord of Death comes and sees Nachiketas there, he apologizes for keeping the son of a Brahman waiting, and says, "Ask any 3 boons you wish, and they will be yours." And for us, the 3rd boon which Nachiketas asks for is the important one. In answer to the 1st 2 boons, the Lord of Death says, "Your father's heart will be appeased. Don't worry about that." And in answer to the 2nd boon, the Lord of Death gives Nachiketas the teaching of yoga and various other teachings too. And the 3rd boon that the boy asks is, "Some say that after death one goes on, and some say no. You who are the ender of all things, the Lord of Death, you are the one to tell me what is the truth about this." And the Lord of Death is very perturbed and tells Nachiketas, "Please don't ask this question. This is the supreme, the last question." But Nachiketas says, the Lord of Death says, "Take the treasures of the earth. You can have all the pleasures of the world, but don't ask for the answer to this." And Nachiketas says, "What use to me are all the pleasures of the senses, the pleasures of the world, the riches of the world, with you, O Lord, in sight?" And the Lord of Death says, "Nachiketas, thou art a fit vessel." If we use Christian language, you are a holy grail for receiving the truth. And the Lord of Death himself gives Nachiketas the supreme truth about the eternity, the immortality of the reality, the absolute, the Atma, as they called it. Now, this is very significant. It puts in symbolical form what happens to you yourself as you enter the profound states of consciousness. From moment to moment, in the real entry into the into the meditative state, you go through various portals of death. That which is realized at this stage is not the whole thing. And you are transformed, you emerge out of that, because you hold yourself in the right way through your power of attentiveness. The attentiveness that never wavers for a single moment. And so, stage by stage, all the functions of the psychophysical organism become quietened down and give place to the profounder state of consciousness which supervenes, and in which all that has gone before is subsumed. Nothing is lost. See? And each of these states of consciousness is a dying to a lesser realization of truth and an emergence into a greater and a greater, a more intense light of truth. Until the final stage, which is possible for a human being, is reached. And then the Absolute has manifested what it needed to manifest through man. This is what it means, all this kind of thing. So that it is no attainment or achievement by Nachiketas or by you or me in terms of something which you or I seek for ourselves, or because of our delusion in the name of others. It's not for myself that I do this, it's for the sake of mankind. But this is done by a trick of self-identification with others, in order that the ambivalent aspect of modesty, of selflessness, may be apparent to those who cannot see the whole truth. So, never seek for oneself anything whatsoever. Be awake in that immediate moment. And in the fullest possible awakening of the immediate moment, the transformation of the circumstance itself goes on. And it will change. As people sometimes say, the Lord answered my prayer. This is how they put it. But there is no prayer involved here. If it is my prayer unto the Lord, then I am seeking for myself. And beware what you pray for. Because when that happens, you have no idea of the full consequence of the gift of the gods. And sometimes it is terrible. One can't bear it. One can't endure it. And things become worse. So, be awake now. Die now, instantly, to every second. Be fully awake to that transforming process. And then death doesn't strike you. It is not delivered unto you as the wages of sin. But death is the great releaser into the mansion not made with hands. One's eternal home. Do bear that in mind. The world is so full of self-centeredness, self-concerned. We live like wild beasts fighting each other. The whole world is doing it. I need not stress that. We all see it in the world today. And we all see how the whole world is working up towards terrible catastrophe. The catastrophe is likely to come. It is not for us to strive to stave off impending catastrophe because of our fears, because of our weakness. Because who am I to stave off impending catastrophe? Do I know how to do it? I, the ordinary mortal, the imperfect one, how can this little brain of mine, this little wavering heart of mine, out of fear, produce any method, any way, which will stave off universal catastrophe? It won't. What I can do is so to be awake and so to be perfectly willing to die all the time that eternal power will shine through somehow. And this is religious action. In that spirit, in that consciousness, the right sort of action will be shown you. You will be shown the way. It will come up from moment to moment. And if you are awake and can remain awake and can remain alert and can remain selfless, then whatsoever you do, spontaneously and naturally, in consequence of that state of mind and consciousness, will be the best possible thing you can do. Because after all, today, tomorrow, anytime, this organism must of necessity die, like all organisms. But shall we die humanly? Shall we die with love and wisdom and truth emanating out of our being? Or shall we die in fear, in misery? Which way shall we die? You can die nobly, beautifully, like a wonderful sunset, casting its benign glory gently, soothingly, healingly upon all the world. That is what we can do. And if we are truly concerned with the religious life, it is that way that we will see things and let life live through us. Instead of trying to twist the course of life in conformity with our fears, our ignorance, our cowardice in facing life. Let us not face life as those who have to summon up a courage and compel oneself to face life. But bearing in mind that wheresoever we look, we shall see life and the ways of life, if our looking is a pure looking. In that way, there is salvation. True salvation for all mankind. The whole karmic process is not our responsibility. That is to say, we don't hold the reins of that karmic process. We can only produce, give rise to influences which are the healing influences. And then karma, in its profoundest reality, this creative action in eternity of the eternal creative power, works unhindered. And therefore, one is no longer an interferer with life. but a true benefactor. You will be a shining center of beneficence upon all around you. That immeasurable, that immortal reality will have found in you, each one of you, each one of us, a holy grail fit for fulfilling its own divine purposes.